saying. It is time now to bring in none other than Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake, baked a cake.
Now you might say, why am I playing this? Well, because Arthur is on the road again, and I don't know if they knew he was coming or not. Good morning, Arthur.
They did know.
Bake a cake. It was my sister's birthday. It wasn't really my sister's birthday yesterday, but we celebrated it yesterday.
When is her real birthday?
The 22nd.
Okay, so at least you're celebrating.
But my niece, her daughter, and her family, husband and children, were visiting from St. Louis. So we all gathered at my nephew's house outside Philly.
Right, but you know, the complication is she a...
Okay. Pardon me?
It's just the complication. Is she a Leo or a Virgo? But she's a Leo.
Oh, who's a Leo?
Your sister.
My sister's a Leo. She's on the cusp.
She really is.
Yeah, she's right on the cusp, and she sometimes she's a tough girl, and I find Leo women are tough.
But you know that the thing about being the cusp is you can also, let's say, embody the diplomatically most intense qualities of each sign.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what's the, is she Virgo? Is that the other?
Well, the 22nd. Yeah. As a matter of fact, this year, but it's all, yeah. You know, it's whether, what nobody usually focuses on is they think, well, you know, the sign changes at midnight because it must, and of course it doesn't because,
no.
Right. So this year, the sun moves into Virgo at 6:20 p.m. on the 22nd. No idea what year your sister was born. We're not going to get into that, but.
Why
know,
not? 1950.
Okay, where? In Brooklyn?
Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. And you know...
Same hospital I was born in.
You have any idea whether it's morning
Same hospital my dentist was born in.
You have any idea whether it was morning or noon or evening?
Like, oh, who remembers?
The thing is, like, for example, if a baby is born this year at 6:21 p.m., that mm-hmm. baby's going to be here. That baby's going to be a Virgo. But if they born it... At 6:15.
Yes, but as you say, it's not a clear-cut thing. You know, it's not like one minute you're a Virgo and the next minute you're a Leo.
Well, it actually is. If you're 6:16, if you're 6:19 and you're born on the East Coast, 6:19 on the 22nd this year, you're a Leo. And
yeah, but as you said, the cusp people often display the characteristics of both.
Intensely. Not necessarily the most complex. Anyway.
Well, the whole reason we're even talking about my sister's birthday is because you played If I Knew You Were Coming, I Baked a Cake.
And you did.
No, I knew they were coming, so I bought a cake.
Well, could he re-record the song then? Because that's what I would do.
I have to say that this is something that both pleases me and irritates me at the same time. But let me say this: I can. My sister's not listening, so I can tell you this. But when she was a teenager, her friend Vicky moved in with us. Don't ask. But anyway, I like Vicky.
How did you know?
Like Vicky. Anyway, so she moved in with us, and I'm 3.5 years older than my sister. So I would go out on a Saturday night with my friends or whatever, and she was too young to do that. But although she always wishes she had a date. And I'd come home, and she and Vicky would be sitting at the dining room table eating an entire Ebinger's blackout cake. This was like their Saturday night ritual. They would iron each other's hair and eat a blackout cake. That was their Saturday night activity. So I once joked, I said, well, you know, my sister would have preferred a date to a blackout cake. But these days she would probably say, no, the blackout cake's more reliable. Anyway, the thing is, there is no more Ebinger's, and there hasn't been for, I don't know, 35 years. And every bakery in Brooklyn now, and probably many bakeries outside Brooklyn, feature a cake they call blackout cake. But it's not blackout cake, because I remember the real cake, as does my sister, who ate a whole one every Saturday night for at least a couple of years. Anyway, the real blackout cake, as made by Ebinger's Bakery, which closed for various reasons. One big one was that after World War II, there was this rumor, maybe not a rumor, that many of the it was in German bakery, and many of the German clerks in the Ebinger store, they had retail stores as well as a major bakery, and they're just in Brooklyn and Queens, by the way, that many of the clerks were Nazi sympathizers. This was the rumor, at least. I have no idea if there was any fact involved here. So little by little, the customer base was lost. And then supermarkets became a big thing. For people who are young, they don't understand that before, let's say, 1950, supermarkets were not what they are now. Anyway, Ebinger's closed, and now we have this persistence of memory about blackout cake, but nobody makes it like the original one. And but if anybody's interested in baking one themselves, there is a recipe that I consider as close to Ebinger's as you're going to get in my book, Arthur Schwartz's New York City Food. And that blackout cake, the original blackout cake, was not only filled with chocolate pudding, but also iced with chocolate pudding. And then they would press, I came outside to get good reception, and now somebody's mowing their lawn.
But of course, it's first thing in the morning.
Yeah, can you hear that? Because it's so I got to move.
No, don't move. We're so used to it. This is the sound. This is a sound of summer.
I'm sitting outside of Brian's house because
we can hear you.
Stone house, and there's no reception.
That's why it's good.
It's 18-inch stone walls. It's hard to find a spot where the phone will work. Anyway, back to blackout cake. So my recipe does, by the way, if you don't want to make a blackout cake, go look at the pudding recipe. It's a great chocolate pudding recipe. So the original cake was inside and outside chocolate pudding, the chocolate cake, and then they would press cake crumbs onto the outside. So it was coated entirely with cake crumbs. Most of the bakeries where I try blackout cake, it has the only similarity it has to the original one is that of chocolate. And they could be very good chocolate cakes, I'm not saying not, but the bakery that I buy my blackout cake from, it's called Lady Bird. It's in Park Slope. And they make whatever it is, it does have chocolate pudding inside, and then it has buttercream on the outside. It's a really great cake, any way you look at it. And there is another bakery in Manhattan called Two Bread Hens or Two Hens, whatever. It used to be connected to Lady Bird. They used to be actually in the same bakery, but the partners split up. And I think that the other one is on the Upper East Side. And if they make it anything like a Lady Bird, that's a pretty good, it's a great chocolate cake.
Okay.
But like I'm saying, every bakery in Brooklyn now makes something called Blackout. There's even one bakery in my neighborhood that makes Blackout cupcakes. Not bad, got to say, for a cupcake. I'm not a big fan of cupcakes. Anyway, I cooked up a storm for my sister's birthday because, for one thing, my nephew and his wife and kids were all at the beach until Saturday night and for a week's vacation, and they certainly had no time to prepare for 11 people. So I did all the prep, mostly cooked at home and brought it here, although we did grill steaks and chicken. But I know I've talked about this on the air before, but I try to do it at least once a year, Bert Green's famous Zadie salad. You know I've talked about this, right?
You talked about it right around the 4th of July, because that is
there
what you
go,
do religiously.
That's right, because usually I make it for the 4th of July, and it's in memoriam to Bert. But also I love, this is a sensational macaroni salad. Now Bert, who died 31 years ago, dear friend, the same age as my father, by the way, who died about the same time, too, but he was a dear close friend. And Bert opened the very first, I think it's been proven, the very first fancy takeout store. It was called The Store in Amagansett, Long Island, which is, in those days, it's one of the Hampton towns. In those days, 40, 50 years ago, it was not the rich people haven that it is today.
No, Amagansett was one of the, it was dotted with rich people havens, but Amagansett was one of the, it's Sag Harbor, Amagansett, and what's the place between Bridgehampton and
So I don't know. I don't know the towns that well. But Southampton was the rich people town.
It still is.
That's where they wore plaid golf pants, even if they weren't playing golf.
Like Greenwich.
And then there's East Hampton, which is now... Anyway, the point is, what the Hamptons was 40, 50 years ago was a haven for Broadway people and even some Hollywood people who used to summer out there. I can't rattle off all the names that used to buy food at Burt's store, but I do remember that this was the favorite macaroni salad of Lauren Bacall. So anyway, I just, you know, and I have mentioned on July 4th that it has the secret ingredient. If you go online and look up Burt Green ziti salad, you'll find stories about this and precise recipes. I followed one of those because I couldn't find my original copy.
And did it work out?
You know, it was perfect. I remember the recipe well enough that it was the only thing that was in this recipe that's not in the original is it called for diced red bell pepper. There was, no, believe it or not, when Burt had the store, there was no red bell pepper in America. I guess if you grew them yourself, you could get ripe bell peppers. But in the stores, you can only buy green. So there was no red pepper in Burt's, but I've used sweet red pepper and not the green. But anyway, a lot of people tried to reproduce this salad, and they said, no, it's not quite right. Well, it ends up this, quote, secret ingredient in the dressing, and it is G. Washington seasoning broth.
Right, that powder that we figured out.
That powder, right.
And you got to get it on. You have to get. I think we discovered that you could get it through Amazon or also even at Walmart.
Yes, you could. I went on. I had. Well, so here's the deal. I had some time to kill one day. I said, you know, I'm going to take the car and go around to all these supermarkets in the neighborhood and see if I can find it. No, I couldn't find it anywhere. But my final supermarket was a place that I shop in frequently, so I know the cashiers. And so I said to the cashier, I'm looking all over for G. Washington broth, and I can't find it. Do you have any idea where I might find it? She said, you got to go to a poor neighborhood, but the problem is Brooklyn doesn't have poor neighborhoods anymore.
Isn't that terrible?
So I had to go online, and you can actually buy it at Walmart for $1.99.
That's it.
And if you want it delivered, it's $6 for delivery.
I know, that's always a complicated, it's a conflict for me.
I found another source on Amazon that had it for $6, including the delivery. And it was Amazon Prime, so I got it in 2 days. I get this stuff, and I'm making the dressing on Saturday morning, and it's a cup and a half of mayonnaise and a half a cup of sour cream and two packets of this G. Washington seasoning and broth. I never looked at the ingredients back when.
Oh, really?
Well, there are no ingredients. The first one is salt. The second one is MSG.
Right.
And the third one is maltodextrin.
Yep.
Which in this form tastes like onion. So that's about the only flavor. So I mix in my two little packets of G. Washington into the mayonnaise and sour cream, and I decided, oh, let me taste this. And it tasted like Lipton onion soup and sour cream dip.
Right.
Which
is yummy.
We used to think it was yummy, yeah. Anyway, I brought this up yesterday in front of my family and my nephew-in-law who in St. Louis, who owns a delicatessen in St. Louis. He said, oh, he took over his grandfather's delicatessen. He opened this deli called Protzels in 1954. If anybody out there has kids who go to Wash U, they're right outside the campus in Clayton. And it's the oldest Jewish deli in St. Louis. In any case, he said, oh, I remember that. I said, Lipton onion soup and sour cream. He said, what I remember is that my grandfather used to make his briskets in the deli using Lipton onion soup mix. I said, yep, that's a recipe.
Yep.
I remember that one.
I told
But they didn't relate to the sour cream dip. Young people don't. I mean, they're not even that young. They're like in their mid-30s.
That's bizarre.
Late 30s. They don't remember.
Because I've trotted it out, and people are like, oh, that's just delicious. And you just kind of, the biggest conflict in our household was whether to use Knorr or Lipton.
Yeah.
I'm Knorr.
Well, let me say that I would never buy G. Washington again. I have a whole box of the stuff, so I may use it until I use it up. But if I was making this macaroni salad and I couldn't find G. Washington in my supermarket, I would use Lipton onion soup mix instead.
Right.
Now, I thought it was pretty awful when I just tasted it like that, sour cream mayonnaise and this powdered stuff. But with all the other stuff that's in this dressing, it does disappear and does give this background flavor that's elusive. You know, well, what does that taste?
Mm-hmm.
But also in this dressing is minced gherkin pickle and a little pickle juice, a minced shallot, two smallish, medium red peppers diced. I knew I had raw onion haters in my crowd here because of my family, so I only used a little more than half of a medium red onion diced, but the recipe actually calls for a whole medium red onion diced. Next time, by the way, the onion haters didn't even notice that there was both shallot and red onion in here, so they all just gobbled up this stuff. So I will put the whole onion in next time. And a good, like a generous handful of chopped dill also in this dressing. And also two medium tomatoes diced up. So with all that other stuff and a pound of ziti cooked till, I don't want to say till tender, but don't leave it too al dente. It will soften up a little bit once it's dressed, but I'm going to give you a little trick here. You don't taste the G. Washington. It is some kind of background flavor. And the salad is really good, but I don't like to make it ahead. So you can make the dressing up to the point of adding the tomato and the dill a day, even 2 days before. And the day you're going to serve it, you cook your ziti, and you add the tomato to the dressing, and you mix it all up and chill it. And a lot of dill. And that sort of makes it, I think, the dill. Now I forgot what I was going to add to all this, but it's a great salad, and they gobbled it up, and I made a lot.
Well, that's good. Hey, I want to go back to the blackout cake for one quick second.
Okay.
I want to go backwards twice.
Yeah.
First
go
is,
ahead.
There was something, now in about 4 years ago, there was a sort of a renaissance about this blackout cake. It was rediscovered as Brooklyn's legendary cake.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw any of those. It is alleged to be Ebinger's. But I just...
No, I know that recipe. It's not Ebinger's.
Okay.
I'm telling you, my recipe...
I understand. That's why I'm going back to it.
And I make the pudding much more frequently than I make the whole cake. And I must say, it's a great chocolate pudding. So if you have no inclination to bake, at least make the chocolate pudding.
All right.
So now backtrack to ziti salad.
Well, before we backtrack to ziti salad, once again, tell me what year your sister was born. You said 1950?
August 22nd, 1950, but I don't know what
time
of day.
She's pure Leo.
She's pure Leo.
Yeah, it changed on the 23rd.
Well, that would make sense. Except for her, I guess, her obsessive compulsive behavior is just obsessed.
Well,
something to
she
do
could
with
have she could have planets. Obviously, she could have planets in Virgo. But just for the record,
yes, because she's like hyper organized,
right? So those are definitely planets in Virgo. But we're just talking about the sun, which is 1/12 of the whole recipe, and that 12th in 1950. It was August 23rd that the sun changed. So she's 22nd.
I have to tell her that you're a pure Leo.
Pure Leo.
With perhaps some Virgo tendencies.
Hey, but of course. You're always going, because of sun and Venus, which are only get two signs before or after your sign, you're going to have those tendencies. Then you've got the outer planets. All right. And then I had one other question, which is, did you say you grilled chicken?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't. My nephew did.
Does he marinate? Does he just throw it down?
No, we just put it on the grill.
Okay. Salt, pepper.
Marinate? I'll tell you, here's something to marinate with. I've been doing this at home. Maybe I mentioned this too. Chimichurri. I've been making chimichurri. Chimichurri is Argentinian condiment sauce that Argentinians eat with both chicken and meat. You know, they're a big, big beef-eating country. And I must say, and we were grilling these great steaks and chicken, and I thought, oh, I'll get a little chimichurri in. Also, I was able to score an incredible bunch of parsley at the farmer's market on Saturday. So I made a huge amount of very good chimichurri. So chimichurri is just parsley. We did this, and you hated it because it had too much garlic. But in the end, it really doesn't taste like that garlicky. I actually, in was thinking about Jill, I only put 3 cloves of garlic in, but then it wasn't enough, so I added a 4th, and they were pretty big cloves of garlic. So I had this huge bunch of parsley. I picked off the leaves, something to do in the morning while you're drinking your coffee. And so I had about a quart of parsley leaves, to which I added 4 cloves of garlic, about a cup of olive oil, several big pinches of salt. I kept adding a little bit more. And because Brian, my nephew, loves hot things, I put in a goodly amount of Calabrian hot pepper, which sort of got lost in there. I guess it had a background heat, but if it was to my taste and Brian's taste, we would have added more, but I was afraid to make it really hot because, you know, the kids and who knows, not going to like that. So the chimichurri was great on the chicken, but at home, I've done this a few times now. I take about half of my chimichurri and marinate chicken thighs. We like thighs. You can do any part of the chicken you want, but I just do thighs. And you marinate them for, I don't know, a couple of hours, no more than that, in the chimichurri. And it doesn't have to actually coat the chicken, but it will, you know, coat it enough. And you just put the chicken on a sheet pan in a 450-degree oven. I usually cook 40, 45 minutes for thighs. At 450, they get nice and crispy brown on the outside. I do use the thighs with bone and skin on. Mm-hmm. And then you can serve the chimichurri on the side. I don't marinate much. I always feel... Well, for one thing, when you marinate chicken too long, it breaks down the protein and it gets mushy, and I don't like that texture.
Right. I will say, I'm a major marinator. Well, that's not true. I am a. This is a philosophical question. How long did?
How long? What?
Yeah. When you are marinating,
yes.
Is there a time, like after 5 hours?
It depends on what you're marinating.
Right.
You know, red meat, yeah. Lamb, even pork, can be marinated a lot longer than chicken, or I would never marinate
That's
fish.
Why you didn't like the speedies or whatever they were
probably.
Called.
But I find that, for instance, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, when we were near Binghamton, we
That's
stopped
what I just
lunch.
Said. That's why you didn't like the are they called speedies?
Speedies, yeah.
Right. That's
so
what Speedies.
So this guy said he marinates the chicken for 2 to 4 days. I said, I don't want to eat that.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, and then by the way, I got home. You know, Speedies is a corruption of, well, not so corrupt, of the Italian word spiedo or spiedi, plural. And that means something on a skewer.
Right.
So that's where Speedies come from. And they are, in fact, in theory, skewered chicken. That's been marinated basically in wishbone Italian dressing.
Which you can't really go wrong. My mother's recipe...
Yes, you can go wrong.
Wait
if
one second.
Marinated for 2 to 4 days, it's
okay.
going to be mush.
But for dinner, what my mother used to take was wishbone Italian dressing. This is, and whatchamacallit, let's say, not a scant, but a quarter teaspoon of chili powder. Why
yeah,
am I...
Well,
wait,
a little,
stop.
A little
stop. That's wrong. A quarter teaspoon of curry powder.
Oh, curry powder.
And what it did was it cut the dressing. She couldn't have thought of this herself because she couldn't cook for toffee. But it must have been probably somebody taught her to do that. Anyway, it is sublime. Absolutely sublime. And you
If you serve it to me, don't tell me what's in it.
I won't, but what she would do is she would put it in the oven, you know, same deal. But she would not marinate it, but she would brush it on. What's that called?
Well, that's different.
Right. And so it required a fair bit of brushing.
But, you know, this comes under the, I mean, anything made with wishbone dressing, to me, comes under the category of regrettable recipe.
Well,
I mean, there's always a better way to do it than with a bottle of something.
Right, that is true. But you can pretty much, and also going back, or going all the way back to the beginning of the conversation with Lipton's onion soup or George Washington. The thing is,
Washington. Excuse me, it's not George. It's
G. Washington. I am so sorry. Yeah. So sorry. I apologize. But
don't apologize to me. But I think
listeners, I'm sorry. It's G. Washington.
G. Washington.
Right. Yeah. But that said, the Lipton. The wishbone. Is just one of those tastes where I will say that I did once spend a day trying to recreate the center of Oreo filling. So,
well, you know, I always say, you as an adult, you love whatever you ate as a child, no matter how disgusting.
Yeah. Most people, I'll say pretty much. I will give you a pretty much on that, and I will say
pretty much.
You have. Absolutely solved it because, you know, stone houses are not good for Wi-Fi, but they are very good to ward off, you know, people who are trying to bombard you with catapults or something. So as long as you're outside, it was just beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Not only is it gorgeous here, but I think I mentioned on the air that when I'm back in Brooklyn, I was watching a pair of doves, morning doves, gray doves.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were mating, but in fact, I read a bit about this, and it ends up they were building a nest when I thought they were mating. Anyway, right now, there is a dove that keeps flying into this area where Brian and Michelle had a tree taken down a few weeks ago, and I don't know what it's finding there, but I have a feeling it's finding nesting material there. And what the doves do is... one dove holds down the fort, so to speak, while the other one goes out foraging for nesting material. And they come, now there is a hummingbird here, too.
Mm-hmm.
If I sit still enough, everything will come to me, like in the movies.
That's right. You're at Disney. Arthur Disney.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of rabbits out there jumping around. There's these doves. There's a hummingbird.
Let me know when Aladdin appears, because we're out of time.
Okay, I just wanted to say, so after they build the nest, I watched this thing go on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and the dove sits on the nest. And by the way, they take turns, the male and the female take turns guarding the nest and the eggs, while the other one gets a chance to go eat. I think we went away for a week, I come back, the doves are out of the nest, and they're sitting on a branch. Just near the nest, and they're not flying away, they're just preening, and the mama or the papa comes by and feeds them, and then I noticed that the mama or the papa perched on a lower limb and made the babies come and get the food. I think that was the first time they flew, and they flew from one branch to a lower branch. And by that night, I noticed them on the branch at 6:30 in the morning, and then I noticed them at 6:30 at night, and then an hour later they were gone. So they flew the coop or the nest. So I call myself an empty nester now. I'm watching these two doves here, and I think that, I don't know, this doesn't seem to be like a mating time to doves, but they are gathering something there. All right, my time is up, and... I'm going to go inside the house now and get another cup of coffee.
Thank you. Bake a cake.